The Unshackled Waves, episode 265.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Australia, this is The Unshackled Waves with Tim Wills, brought to you by theunshackled.net.
Hello everyone, welcome to another Waves episode. Hong Kong, the special administrative region of the People's Republic of China, has seen 13 consecutive weeks of protests to preserve the region's democracy and civil rights. These protests were set off by opposition to a proposed extradition bill, which had the potential to see residents of Hong Kong face the mainland Chinese government legal system. Last week, the chief executive of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, announced she was withdrawing the extradition bill after initially stating that it would only be delayed. Hong Kong, since its transfer to the People's Republic of China by the British in 1997, when their lease on the region expired, has been governed by the One Country, Two Systems constitutional principle. This means that Hong Kong was able to keep its British system of government and law until 2047. But of course, the People's Republic of China, governed by the Chinese Communist Party, has a One China policy, which states that all ethnically Chinese territories shall be under the jurisdiction of the One Chinese government. Chinese tanks were spotted outside Hong Kong as the protests continued. The local police began to become more aggressive in their response to protests with arrests and intimidation. It is still a very unpredictable and volatile situation. The eyes of the world have been on Hong Kong and how an increasingly aggressive and assertive Chinese Communist Party government would respond. Tiananmen Square 2 looked to be off the table, though their goal was still to maintain order and authority in the region. The Hong Kong-China dispute has spilled over into Australian cities, not just because of our high Chinese immigrant population, but because of the activities and espionage of the Chinese Communist Party they engage in Australia. Pro-Hong Kong protests have been flooded by pro-China activists. As a result, some pro-Hong Kong protesters in Australia are wearing face masks to hide their identity from the Chinese authorities. It is concerning that we are supposed to all be Australians, yet we are increasingly seeing another state, a totalitarian one, infiltrate our population and politics. Last month, Liberal backbencher Andrew Hastie wrote an op-ed in the Fairfax newspapers outlining why China's global ambitions threaten Australia's future. It spooked a lot of his fellow MPs from both sides of politics, but we have seen our politicians come under the influence of the Chinese Communist Party's agents, normally businessmen in recent times. The most famous case was, of course, Labor Senator Sam Dastyari. His New South Wales Labor Party was exposed at the Independent Commission Against Corruption of accepting an illegal $100,000 donation from Chinese businessman Hung Guangmo, who has been banned from re-entering Australia. The ABC has also revealed that the two Chinese-Australian candidates for the inner Melbourne seat of Chisholm at the just-passed federal election, the Liberals' Gladys Liu, the now-elected MP for the seat, and her Labour opponent Jennifer Yang, were both members of Chinese associations that upon investigation ultimately had links to the Chinese government. Australia really is in the middle of a shit sandwich, as we are dependent on China significantly when it comes to trade. Our leaders have kicked the can down the road with China, but are slowly getting their heads out of the sand. They know that something must be done, but they have no idea what. To gain a greater understanding of how deep the Chinese Communist Party influence is in Australia, plus the various human rights abuses that they are committing on their own people, is Shan Ju Lin. Shan Ju Lin was born in Taiwan, which is officially called the Republic of China. The island is one that the People's Republic of China would like to incorporate under its rule. She ran in the recent Queensland state election in 2017 as an independent candidate for the seat of Bundamwa in her town of Ipswich. She polled approximately 5% of the vote, which is a decent effort for a first-time independent candidate. She's known throughout her area for holding the annual World Harmony Day. She's been on the show before, and given her unique insight, I thought she would be the perfect person to talk to discuss the recent China crisis in Australia. Shan, welcome back to the show.
Oh, hi, team. Thank you for having me again.
Now, you were born and grew up in Taiwan. The Chinese Communist Party wishes for the nation to be under its rule. Obviously, they consider all ethnically Chinese people part of their rule. So my first question is, obviously, because you're very outspoken on social media against the Chinese Communist Party and being a Chinese ethnically person, has that been enough to make you a person of interest to them? Have you noticed anything?
First of all, I need to correct what you say. I'm a Chinese person. I'm not a Chinese person. Of course, I'm Australian, but I'm definitely not a Chinese. Sorry.
So yeah. You consider yourself Taiwanese, not Chinese?
Not Chinese. So as so many Taiwanese people don't think they are Chinese.
Though my question still stands, is the Chinese Communist Party, do you feel that they want to monitor you here in Australia? That's my question.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, I receive 5 or 6 calls from China, from a phone call. I think it's from the Chinese government. Yeah, every day. They're monitoring where I go, what I say, what am I doing.
Surveillance is one thing, but has there ever been, you felt actually any physical intimidation? Because there's been cases where they've broken into houses and ruffled up things. Has anything like that happened to you?
I don't think that would do that extent in Australia, really. I think they're just more spying. They try to get information. That's all they want.
Now, obviously, the People's Republic of China, it's the biggest authoritarian government we have ever seen, and modern technology has seen it able to become a real-life Big Brother state. So this means it's been able to rewrite its own history through internet censorship and control what news is reported. They've also got their social credit system, where it encourages Chinese people to have good societal and citizenship habits, but there's heaps of human rights abuses that they're doing a better job in covering up. And, well, I shouldn't just say human rights abuses, I'd say atrocities. Mm-hmm. Can you expose to the audience just what exactly is happening right in front of our eyes?
I can just tell you what I read from the media, heard from other people. I haven't really been to China, so, but there's a lot of report about it, like they persecuting religious people with religious belief. Also, they're very against people with democratic mind, like Hong Kong. Now, they publicly asking for democracy. Right? They want to have their own leader. They want to elect their own leader. That's not allowed in China. So they basically have there's no democracy at all in China. It's very bad. Even like Chinese people or Chinese students, whatever they say, whatever I do, they're still monitored. I'm not Chinese, so of course they monitor me, but this for Chinese people, it's different extent. They will threaten their family in China if they do say something, criticize Chinese government. Their family back in China will all suffer from what the person do in overseas, from what their family member do in overseas.
It's very chilling that you, even though you might be free in the West, if you've got relatives in China, then the Chinese Communist Party can use them as hostages. And of course, I recall when I was younger, there was a huge Free Tibet movement, which was popular in Hollywood, like people like Richard Gere, and obviously the Dalai Lama is the Tibetan leader in exile, and there was a brutal crackdown in 1989 in Tibet, but these days it's not talked about, and it was actually reported that because of the Hong Kong protest that there's been a further crackdown in Tibet.
Ah, further crack down. No, that further crack it down. They haven't been, it's just said this way, they've never been stopped persecuting their own people for the last, how many years? More than 60 years of regime. They have never stopped killing their own people. There's more than 18 million people in a, 18, more than 18 million innocent Chinese people died during their power, when they come in power.
Yeah, and it's a huge number because China is such a large populated country, but they're all people.
So they never stop. I just say not be, yeah, they just never stop killing their own people. And the method of killing, the way they're killing it is, it's getting more and more evil, like now they're organ harvesting the people. Before, we can only hear, oh, they're organ harvesting Falun Gong practitioners. Now they're organ harvesting Christians and Tibetans and all different minority, all different, whoever they want to destroy.
You mentioned Falun Gong. They're a well. They're not a certain ethnic group. They're a movement in China.
It's not actually a movement, it's just an exercising group. They practice it, they meditate, they practice meditation and they study Buddha law to try to become a good person, try to rid of all the bad thought and just, for their own benefits, own health benefits. And because it works for many people, so there's about 100 million people practicing Falun Gong. And so it's more than their members are, they actually don't have a membership. It's more and more people, about 100 million people are practicing Falun Gong. So the Zhang Zhenming scale of, they're actually more than Communist Party members. So they're afraid to lose their power to Falun Gong people. But I mean, Falun Gong practitioners, they don't even want to involve with their politics. So it's just their own, it's just jealousy, jealous plus fear, their own fear, the CCP. So they're just persecuting people out from nothing.
Yeah, they've never been a political or gotten political, but because Falun Gong practitioners have too much independent thinking, that's enough of a threat to, because the Chinese Communist Party is extremely paranoid that about anything that they can't control, and they felt that they couldn't control
Well,
Falun Gong
exactly.
practitioners.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They want everything under their control. And now they're developing this CCTV, even in household. So,
Wow.
yeah, so in another 4 years' time, they have a plan, another 4 years' time, they won't have a, they plan to have a CCTV everywhere, even, everywhere in inside the house, inside the household.
And there's also been a tension on the Uyghur people in Xinjiang province. They're basically being they're Muslims. They're being put in or concentration camps, re-education camps. Now, you and I, we're both critical of like the influence of Islam in Australia, but we don't want to put them in camps and basically
No, exactly. That's exactly
torture
right.
them into submission. And no human deserves that. But again, that they are people who Chinese Communist Party believes is a threat to their power.
Oh yeah, they paranoid with everything, so it's really bad. I think that they will very soon be collapsed because no one can bear in that kind of a power, especially now Hong Kong people. Who is going to stand like that? Nobody would. And that power, and even now Trump, he's very clearly, said he doesn't want to see any persecution in Hong Kong, anything happen in Hong Kong, he I think he was stepping. And even, who is it, the other international leaders, I believe they would just, they would do something if they do really, you know, persecuting Hong Kongese people.
Well, I think that's why, to use a common term, the Chinese authorities have shown some form of restraint. Obviously, they didn't want, they knew it would be bad internationally if they undertook Tiananmen Square too, with the world's media watching, because in 1989 it was just TV, print, radio. But we had one of our reporters, Morgan Munro, in Hong Kong. There's been heaps of media who've, independent media, have gone on to Hong Kong, and so everything is documented. And so Chinese Communist Party has to be a bit more careful.
Oh, you know what? CIA would have all this information. So, I mean, I believe one day they will just use the, all this. This data is gradually coming out now. So gradually, I think they will release more information to, if the CCP getting too bad. They will just use all the data they have to, you know, to expose CCP. And Chinese people wouldn't want to take that.
Now, the Hong Kong pro-democracy protests, they were triggered by a extradition bill proposed by the chief executive of what is called the Special Administrative Region of Hong Kong.
Well, I think this is not proposed by them, it's proposed by CCP. They just have to follow what CCP say.
Carrie Lam has said all this has been my call. That's, she said, you know, I am the chief executive of Hong Kong people. She's tried to maintain that.
Exactly. And I believe in that, in her position, is extremely difficult. So she privately, she has expressed to, you know, some couple of business people, if she could, she want to quit. And she would like to give a deep apologies to whole Hong Kongese people, whole Hong Kongers. That's what she said privately. But publicly, she can't. She has to follow.
So you actually believe she does want to do the right thing, Carrie Lam, but there's just so much pressure on her?
Exactly. And even her life is in danger.
Yeah, that's certainly a different, I guess, more humane portrait of her, because she's basically been cast as the villain in this. And first, she said she was delaying the bill, but after 13 weeks of protests, and although the police were very restrained, there was increasing brutality with very public arrests, physical arrests of just protesters and some of the leaders. And everyone's wondering now, is there going to be a secret purge now that the bill has been killed?
Yeah, so now they're killing people like by making like their suicide, you know, like a lot of what happened in USA, you know, what happened about Clinton. I think that that's what they're going to do now. So Hong Kong has to be very careful, you know.
The Hong Kong protesters, they've been pretty audacious with their demands. Obviously, the complete withdrawal of the extradition bill, that was one of their five demands. But the other demands they've got is retraction of the riot, characterization of their protests, release and exoneration of arrested protesters, establishment of independent commission into police conduct, and also the resignation of Carrie Lam and implementation of universal suffrage. Obviously, you know, those demands are a very noble, and they're right, but I feel they're never going to be fulfilled.
No, exactly. But Hong Konger wouldn't stop pursuing it. And that's where the international power will come in. And that's why I very believe so, that the CCP is going to clip very soon. The more bad thing they do, you know, it just fasten the speed they clip, for them to collapse. And have you noticed now Trump is more, you know, in trade war? Anything happen in Hong Kong or in China, Trump is more stand firm in their trade war. Have you noticed that?
Yes, because now that the Chinese there, they're back at the table now. Everyone was expecting a big showdown at the G7, but Chinese, they communicate through their foreign ministry, said, yes, we're willing to work this out, which was sort of a change to some of their alarming and angry language.
Yeah. It's good that Trump can make them angry. You know.
Well, they are getting Chinese Communist Party more unhinged, and we've noticed that in Australia because obviously Chinese Communist Party has been trying to influence our political process and our foreign policy, but they've gotten increasingly more firm with the Australian government. They've ramped up the rhetoric. They basically threatened the Australian government that if they were to potentially host US missiles in Australia, which they believe were directed at China, then it wouldn't be in everyone's interest. And of course, when Liberal backbencher Andrew Hastie published his op-ed talking about the threat of China and how we need to properly understand who we're dealing with, the Chinese government responded very quickly to say he had a Cold War mentality and that the peaceful rise of China is going to benefit us all, which was an extremely Orwellian response for them to say. And of course, the Chinese ambassador to Australia has basically said to our government, don't get involved in the Hong Kong situation, stay out of it.
But do you think they'll work? Do you think the theory will work? I just think they are exposing themselves. And while they're saying things more like that, people get more, you know, people more, hang on a sec, who am I dealing with now? You know what I mean? Before, they probably think, oh, Chinese Communist Party, they're good people. They're, you know, doesn't matter anyway. So it doesn't matter what they are treating Chinese people. As long as we get their business, though, that's all we want. But now, hang on a sec. When you talk to me like that, I have to defend my country, my people. Don't you think? The more they threat, I just don't think that the work. Really, they're just stupid.
Yeah, you would hope so, that if a foreign government directly threatens your nation, you'd expect your government to respond. But the Australian government has been very wishy-washy with that. In their response to it, they haven't taken the side of the pro-democracy protesters. There's been, obviously, Andrew Hastie is just a backbencher, but he really launched this conversation about the threat that the Chinese Communist Party poses. He has been joined by other Liberal backbenchers, Tim Wilson, James Patterson, Amanda Stoker and Dave Sharma. They were focused on our university system because there's so many Chinese students there now, and obviously even though they're in Australia, they can still be influenced by the Chinese government. And then there's all these Confucius centers set up at universities around Australia, and the real flashpoint was the University of Queensland, where there was a protest event against their Confucius Center, basically because the previous week a group of Hong Kong activists, they were demonstrating at the university, and all of a sudden pro-Chinese Communist Party supporters came and basically started punching them.
You know what? When I was teaching at one of the high school in Gold Coast, I had a short contract there because one of the Chinese teacher is away on maternity leave. So I took a very short contract there. And they have one Chinese teacher from Mainland who is also one of the coordinators of the Confucius Institution. And she told me, have to listen to the party. I say, what? So which party in Australia we have to listen? You know, I'm a teacher. I don't have to be told to listen to Chinese Communist Party. I'm a school teacher. If I listen to the Chinese Communist Party, I would have to use the propaganda on my students, which is Australian students. So that's not right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're an Australian, and if you're teaching at an Australian university, you shouldn't be acting on behalf of a foreign government.
And the thing is, they're not only in university, they're also in the high school and primary school. They also have a Confucius Institution
program. Yes, that's been exposed recently.
Exactly, not just in university. They're trying to brainwash the kids from young, like the left wings. They want to do this LGBT program. They brainwashing the kids from kindergarten, from preschool. You know, they have their own agenda.
And we've seen with there's been pro Hong Kong democracy demonstrations in Australia, but they've always, a lot of them have been able to be countered by this sudden influx of pro Chinese Communist Party supporters, and a lot of Hong Kong activists are covering their face. And I'm not sure if you've been watching Avi Yemini's videos.
Yes, I do. Yes. Yes.
Been at the Melbourne ones, and it was quite concerning watching them. He was interviewing the pro Chinese Communist Party activists or protesters, and they were like, they're in Australia. They were really forceful that Hong Kong belongs to China. It's one China, and you know, we love our country. And they just seemed like they were completely, like, they didn't look standard brainwashed, but like they were like really hardcore. That, you know, they're yelling at Avi Yemini that this is how China is, and that's scary.
Yeah, exactly. And now they're brainwashing our kids as well. You know, when I take that short contract, they say, "Oh, is it Taiwan belong to Hong Kong? Belong to China?" I say, "No, of course not." And the students say, "But our teachers say yes, Taiwan belong to China." You know, they have this kind of propaganda. They want to brainwashing our kids, the kids in the world. Now they have a Confucius Institution around the world. So that's how they're doing, the brainwashing our kids.
Yeah, and it seems to be working. And I know that I've heard stories that Chinese authorities in Australia, they provide assistance for Chinese people in Australia to attend these demonstrations. It's been exposed on Four Corners that a lot of these pro-China demonstrations, they're arranged by the Chinese authorities.
Exactly. They're being paid. In other words, they're all being paid. Because Chinese people, they wouldn't just go do things like protesting without paying. They think everything they do, they should be paid. That's why they can't believe there's so many people go on the street just by voluntary. They don't believe on that.
I suppose you can't blame too many of them who, you know, might be young students for accepting money to basically hold up a sign, but ultimately you would hope that they'd be more principled than that, but that's probably the same with a lot of young people today. They're just not that engaged enough that they stand for principles. Someone says, "I'll pay you $50 to be here," or something like that, they'll do it.
Oh, more than $50, I believe. Yeah.
Now, it seems to be, and like we criticize the ABC in Australia a lot for some of their journalism, but they've done a lot of really good reports on their Four Corners program on Chinese influence in Australia.
Yeah, I think of a Four Corners has done their very good job, because you know what? Because after they're exposing the CCP foreign influence in Australia, now country around the world started thinking, yes, that's what happened in their country as well. So once one country stand up against that influence, there will be more country involved, and especially Trump. Whatever Trump want to do, he will do it well, and he will, you know, that's why we need someone like a Trump in Australia as well.
Well, the first politician to have their downfall at the hands of Chinese Communist Party influence was former Labor Senator Sam Dastyari, because during the 2016 election, he was revealed to hold a press conference for only Chinese state media, saying that we support Chinese sovereignty over the South China Sea, contradicting Labor policy at the time. And he was very keen to get a lot of money from this Chinese businessman who's been banned from Australia, Hung Jangimo, who's he's been in the news again lately. And what forced him to resign at the end is that he tipped off Hung that their phones were being bugged by ASIO, our domestic intelligence agency, and so they should go outside to talk. And a lot of people saw what he did as treasonous, and he was nicknamed Shanghai Sam. And obviously that was, he was just the first one who was sloppy enough to be exposed, but it certainly opened up a wider suspicion of how intertwined are our politicians with, well, Chinese business community is often like is also controlled by a Chinese Communist Party. I mean, communist and business obviously are not mutually exclusive these days.
Exactly. Even they're using the Taiwanese people as well. Taiwanese people who you know, who love monies, they would just buy them and do you know, getting information from these people. Even that, they do all different things. They have their spies everywhere.
As I mentioned, Dastyari has been in the news again because the New South Wales Labor Party was exposed in receiving an illegal $100,000 cash donation in the Aldi bag from Hung Jangimo. And a lot of it was coordinated by this former Labor MP, Ernst Wong. And I actually looked him up, and he's actually not from Chinese mainland. He's from Hong Kong, yet he seems to be, allegedly, I should say, associating with Chinese Communist Party linked businesses. Now, he testified before ICAC that Hung was acting as a courier, saying that the $100,000 had come from a Chinese fundraising dinner. But the reason why it's before ICAC is because the Labor Party and the State Secretary Kayla Minnan has been suspended because they basically laundered the $100,000 donation through this fundraising dinner and applied the donations to all these individual Chinese people on the electoral roll.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Australian people still kept voting them in. What are you going to do?
Well, thankfully, New South Wales Labor didn't win the state election earlier this year in March, because, well, you can imagine what the government would be like now.
Yeah, well, it's true, yeah. But they, not just the Labor, even, I mean, Liberal, they still have a, you know, they still buy them.
Not, yes.
Doesn't matter what party, people who has power, they would just, they pop by people who has power in Australia.
Yes, because it's been revealed by, again, the ABC recently, because there was much focus that the electorate of Chisholm in inner Melbourne, it's actually close to where our studio is, that was a all-Chinese contest. The Liberal candidate Gladys Liu was a Chinese Australian, and so was the Labor candidate Jennifer Yang. So much was made that whoever won, or which party won, they'd have the first Chinese-Australian MP in the lower house. And Scott Morrison was very eager to be seen with Gladys Liu and held up her hand during her maiden speech. But then it was revealed that both Gladys Liu and Jennifer Yang, they were members of, or in fact, honorary chairs of the United Chinese Commerce Association of Australia, which is linked to the World Trade United Foundation, which is linked to the Chinese United Front. And it was very hard to follow this article, just all the interlinks and that, which shows just the level of influence that the Chinese Communist Party seeks to do in Australia. But it sort of appeared like this seat, Chisholm, had basically the Chinese Communist Party had sort of thought they could buy it during the election, and we basically had one of our seats basically becoming a contest between two factions of the Chinese Communist Party.
Exactly. If you think about, they even buying students to do their propaganda, why wouldn't they buy people with power? You know what I mean? They even buy students.
Yes, I mean, they'd want to get as much influence as they can in Parliament. Now, Gladys Liu, she was the winner of Chisholm for the Liberal Party. She's claimed that her association with these groups was a long time ago. She's not under their influence anymore. Do you believe that?
No, of course not. Who would believe that? Every single, even businessman in overseas or, you know, in China, they're all controlled by CCP.
And also in that ABC article, it named the Victorian Liberal MLC, Bruce Atkinson, who was the speaker of it, or should I say president of the Legislative Council for a number of years. He had made many trips to China as part of this commerce association. And yeah, I've actually heard from some of my friends in the Liberal Party that a lot of even the lower party members are enticed into taking studies trips to China, which seem all innocent, but they aim to propagandize that, look how advanced modern China is, you know, you want to do trade with us, basically trying to make you an agent without you actively knowing.
Exactly. Now, I think they, for all their Chinese students who are going to overseas, they would just interview them before they go to overseas. They will ask them to do whatever they want. So, and even one of the Confucius is, how do you say, you know, that in school, they not just have a teacher, they have these student teacher, something like what do we call in Australia, called student teacher. Even they're using them as spies. And one of the student teacher, I say, oh, she has been offered to buy a house here, to use her name to buy a house in Australia. So they actually pay her the money for her to buy a house in Australia.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's a very big investment, it seems.
Yeah, they use their name, you know, to buy houses in Australia. So, you know, I mean, and now they're giving them, the Australian government give them 10 years of visa so they can travel to Australia, they can buy a house here, they can study here, they can do, and they just like Australian.
Now, you mentioned that you're a great admirer of Trump and him engaging in this, what's termed, trade war with China. And it seems that the reason why the Australian government has been so timid in backing the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong is because basically they believe that our economic future depends on China, that if China withhold goods or other forms of labor, then that would basically destroy the Australian economy. And of course, over the years, there's been a lot of Chinese buy-up of our farmlands, and then bizarrely, even the Northern Territory government sold the port of Darwin to China. And so probably Australia's economic intertwinement with China is a lot more advanced than the United States. But it all goes back to that Australia always had a neutral policy towards China. This was back when John Howard was Prime Minister, while the US, being the global power that it is, has always seen China as a threat to stability in the Pacific.
Well, really, I remember Morrison has said one word. He says Australian people have to get used to the trade war. Have you seen the report?
No, I haven't heard anyone in Australia saying that.
Oh, no, Morrison, Scott Morrison. He says that we just have to get used to the trade war. We have no choice. We have to stand with the USA.
So you think that obviously Scott Morrison said that because we're still a US ally, but if Trump is willing to make the sacrifice, economic sacrifice for the American people, do you think Scott Morrison should be prepared to do the same for Australia's economy and people?
Well, Trump would have to, I believe he would do something to look after Australia as well. While during trade war, he has to be very careful to look after the international, USA ally as well. But of course, the tariff that's is trillion, you know, it's a lot of money there involved. So, I mean, he can have some sort of other do from somewhere else to compensate Australia's lose. I'm sure he will do that.
And obviously, China is trying to increase its influence in the Asia Pacific region. Obviously, the build up of islands in the South China Sea, trying to control that important shipping route, and also they're in the Pacific Islands, and it was exposed at the Pacific Islands Forum recently over the Australia needed to do more on climate change in the Pacific region. That's basically because China is basically buying these small nations there, and basically them attacking Australia is of benefit to China, even though of course China keeps polluting.
Well, yes, but if you look at Vietnam, even that Vietnam is a communist country, they're very, very against of China.
Yes, which is good. Yes.
Which is good. So, I mean, it's not everybody in Pacific region listen to them. And Indonesian, they very against China as well. So I just wouldn't think China could do much more than what they're doing now, really. And because USA is stand very firm with them, you know, anything they do to, like now they sold more weapons to Taiwan. You heard that, right?
The USA, yes.
Yes. So now they have a very good tie. USA have a very good tie with Japan as well. So, I mean, they can't really get much. If they want to do more, the international power will just get in and to stop them. I really wouldn't worry about what they do in Pacific region, because the more they show they're greedy, the more interference from international will, you know, to show will defend more. I just don't think they can do anything more than that.
Well, it's because they don't have many allies worldwide, and it's just easy to basically buy nations' votes at the United Nations or whatever, because it's not just Pacific Islands, but they've also, well, basically engaging in a colonialization of African nations, mainly to get the resources. But there's a lot of Chinese investment is the polite way to put it, but it's bad influence.
Yeah, they think of buying. They don't want war. They want to use money as weapon. So they're using, and even themselves, they're owing a lot of, they have a lot of debt as well. You know, they just are printing money to do this One Belt, One Road. This is just a scam, really. They don't have that much money to spend on it. It's just a scam, purely just a scam, but people fall into it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because obviously China's promoting this. It's gonna make trade routes, make sure that we can trade as much as possible, but it's all about having trade on China's terms, obviously only through channels we have approved of.
Exactly, and people falling into their trap, you know, many, many countries, but now they start to wake up. But I still think, you know, the more ambitious they have to the world, the people will wake up. I think there's more people now waking up then, like 2 years ago, you know, people understand better, you know, like a Hong Kong protest, they're waking up more people, people can see what they're doing now. So the more bad thing they do, more people waking up. So I just think that's, in another word, it's a good thing for them to do a bad thing. You know what I mean?
Yes, they certainly are making a lot of mistakes lately.
Exactly.
And it's having
they're making mistakes all in their more than 60-year regime. There's no one good thing they did.
No.
They're trying, so, you know.
Well,
but they're showing more and more what they want, you know.
And I think now, because they are becoming increasingly threatening, it's making the ordinary Australian wake up to
exactly
the threat of, because Australians, they've always been suspicious of multiculturalism and Australia's identity changing, but now they're seeing with Chinese immigration that there's an additional threat to it, and that is that our actual policies and liberties can be eroded.
I think globalization is more threatened than multiculturalism. They're using globalization to buy their property here in Australia, you know, and to come to here to, they can set up business here, they can, you know, they can just do everything like Australian people do. And they take our market and then they take it back to their country. So I think globalization is more threatened than multiculturalism.
Potentially, certainly when you have a nation which is not a free market capitalist nation, and it's not a private corporation which is buying things, but a state-owned enterprise, then that's not real globalization.
No, but they're using it. They're using globalization to invade other countries. That's what they're using.
Yes, well, certainly using the cover of it. Now, obviously, I've talked about how the Chinese Communist Party is trying to compromise our political system, but certainly one government agency which is sort of making sure that the threat is seen single-handedly is ASIO, Australia's Security and Intelligence Organization. And they've, for a number of years, have been warning politicians, you know, be careful of these Chinese businessmen and other community leaders because they're trying to influence our politics. And it was quite interesting that the outgoing ASIO boss, Duncan Lewis, basically said that we see it as our duty to alert the public to the threat of foreign interference and influence. It sort of seemed to me that he's sort of saying if our politicians are inept, then, you know, we as a security agency will pick up the slack here.
Now, you know, they're just using everybody. Yeah, they buy politicians. That try to, if they can buy politicians, they can buy the country. That's what they want to do. And they're brainwashing our kids. So everything is under their control. That's what they want.
Well, obviously, as we've established, it's getting a bit more difficult for the ordinary person to just swallow and accept.
I think Australian people are too kind, and they don't know how evil that CCP is. So, you know, they're very naive. They think, oh, they can provide economic benefit for Australia. Why not? Because everybody need to eat. Everybody need to survive. Everybody, you know. But they don't think they have this propaganda in there. They want your country. They not just want to invest. They want to own your country. They want to control our people. People can't see that.
And it's not for the people of China's benefit, it's for their own power. I mean,
exactly.
Like, obviously, they want to keep the people of China satisfied to a degree, but, you know, they don't care about their welfare, just that they're well enough to not rebel against the government.
And then the more power the CCP have in the world, the Chinese people think, look, our government is so strong. What's wrong with our government? You know what I mean? So they were more obeying their government, and they would think they would just, you know. And I have so many Chinese people who say to me, oh, Australia is a China promise, one of the promise of China. So they're proud of the CCP, what they do, what, you know, in the world. They're proud of the government, you know, the One Belt, One Road project. So I don't know.
Well, we're doing our best to lay it all out on shows such as this. There's other great independent media such as YouTuber Dave Lee setting out what China's really up to. Now, I want to turn back to Taiwan, where you're from. You've said you identify as Taiwanese, not Chinese, though the nation is officially called the Republic of China, and that's because the Nationalist Party that ruled China since it became a republic, it retreated there before the Chinese Communist Party seized power in mainland China in 1949. Now, although it was originally a military dictatorship, Taiwan is now a democracy, and thanks to economic reforms, it's referred to as one of the Asian economic miracles and has first world living standards.
But yes, but let me remind you this one. Can you tell me who won World War II?
The Allies won World War II.
And US is the lead, isn't it?
Yes, and okay. The government at the time was the nationalist Kuomintang.
Exactly. Now, before World War II, Taiwan was a colonial country of Japan for more than 50 years. When the World War II, the US or the airline won the war, and then Japan went back to Japan from Taiwan, right? And then in that the same time, the KMT lose their power to CCP. Taiwan is not even in Chinese geography.
It's an island, a series of islands.
It's an island. So China never owned Taiwan. That's just because KMT lose the power to CCP. So US led KMT to escape to Taiwan and to in charge Taiwan. But at the same time, US has these Taiwan relation regulation, or what do you call it?
Diplomatic.
Yes. They still have these regulation about Taiwan to control. They still have their power on Taiwan. So for me, for many Taiwanese people, they think Taiwan's belong to US. And KMT just there temporary government in Taiwan. They don't, Republic of China don't even exist, because Republic of China is not even in the UN.
Well, it was after the Chinese Communist Party took control in 1949, the Republic of China was recognized as the official China until 1973, when Nixon and Gough Whitlam visited China. And as I mentioned, the Chinese Communist Party has a One China policy, and they still consider Taiwan to be part of China. And so there's this tension that is still simmering and could flare up at any moment between Taiwan and People's Republic of China.
They own Republic of China, but Republic of China doesn't own Taiwan. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I get what you mean.
Yeah. Taiwan never belonged to China.
But it's not stopping them trying to claim it.
No. They even think that U.S. belong to China as well. They think their ancestor found U.S., so U.S. belong to China. And recently, there's one language researcher say, oh, English, French, German, and Korean, Japanese, they are all dialect of China.
Wow.
Yes. They think they own the world.
I've never heard that before, but that,
I can send you the news link.
Oh, yeah, please do, because that's hilarious.
Other than Chinese report, you won't be able to read it.
People's Republic of China have said, because there is, and I assume you support this, the Taiwanese independence movement, which wants to have the Republic of China be the Republic of Taiwan. But Republic of China have said, if that happens, then we would take action to seize Taiwan.
Yeah, PRC, People's Republic of China, yes. Republic of China is the KMT government called Republic of China. But People's Republic of China is the CCP.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's PRC. But I mean, do you think the US will sit in there and let them do that?
Well, no, they wouldn't.
No.
But a lot of people don't want a war with mainland China, Chinese
exactly.
Communist Party.
That's why Trump is using this trade war. I think the trade war destroys CCP.
So what do you think is going to be the end fate for Taiwan? Because it's surviving sort of at the mercy of the People's Republic of China, the Chinese Communist Party. Can Taiwan be properly independent?
I think Taiwanese people like to be 51st state of the USA.
Would you actually like that?
Oh, yeah. Many people agree with that. They don't want ROC. They want to change the country name to RT, Republic of Taiwan. But it doesn't look like it's possible anyway. So if that's the case, I mean, Taiwanese people liked Taiwan to become 51st state of the U.S., and then just work out from there if they can set up as a, but firstly they have to be under US management, otherwise they would never be able to be independent.
You hope that the USA doesn't do what the British did to Hong Kong, because after it gave Hong Kong back to the Chinese in 1997, it only guaranteed democracy and civil liberties in Hong Kong for 50 years until 2047 under the one government, two systems. So we have the situation in Hong Kong, the can being kicked down the road and the day of reckoning to come. And obviously, the status of Taiwan, that's another situation that could flare up, like we've seen with Hong Kong recently. So there still is a lot to sort of be concerned about.
Exactly. But I just never think the CCP will take over this Hong Kong and Taiwan. It would never be possible.
Well, I certainly admire your resilience and obviously your bravery in speaking out. And I'm glad I was able to have you back on the show today to inform our audience about your experience and expertise. Make sure that wherever you go in Australia, you keep telling people the truth and waking them up about the Chinese Communist Party.
Oh, exactly. And yes, even I had a contact, you know, I had I've been talking to Four Corners. I'm really glad at what they do today. And yeah, I think I do have a little bit contribution in this part.
Oh, well, all the best, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you. Bye.
And that's the show for today. I would like to now share with you a very big announcement regarding the future of this show. This will be the second last episode of The Unshackled Waves. Beginning on Sunday, the 15th of September, I'll be launching a brand new fast-paced live and information show called Wilmsfront. It'll be broadcast Sunday, Wednesday and Friday nights Melbourne time on my own personal YouTube channel, and of course will be available on replay after on rationalrise.tv and on your preferred podcasting platform. So it's very exciting that we're moving into the next phase of the Unshackled project, because as you know, news breaks so quickly and the news cycle can change dramatically in less than 24 hours. Waves most of the time is pre-recorded and tends to focus on a single issue or three or four at most. So by the time a new episode is edited and released, the news cycle has already changed. So with a live show aimed at being fast-paced, bringing you all the relevant news happening around the globe right away and offering immediate analysis, we hope to bring you with The Unshackled a more comprehensive summary of what is happening in our world. It is another further step in our production schedule this year. My colleague Steele Archer now has his own show, Detonation. There has also been The Uncuckables, our joint production with The XYZ and The Rational Rise, live every Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on its dedicated YouTube channel, now with its own website, theuncuckables.com. And on Tuesday evening, we launched Trans-Tasman Talk, another joint production between us and our New Zealand counterpart, rightminds.nz. It is hosted by myself and Right Minds editor Due DeBoer. The aim of the show is to inform our respective audiences about the similar and different battles we are facing as Anglosphere nations of the South Pacific. It is live on both the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. Melbourne time. So if you're following all that, I'll be broadcasting live 5 nights a week, so pretty much full-time, 3 nights a week on my own Wilmsfront show, and then, of course, once a week with The Uncuckables on Thursday, and now Trans-Tasman Talk on Tuesdays. We are also doing our bit to fight the social media deplatforming and censorship. James Fox Higgins, as I've mentioned before, has launched rationalrise.tv, which is a self-hosted video site which intends to be the new home of alt-media content in Australia. It will host Rational Rise XYZ, Unshackled and other exclusive content, so make sure you check it out and take out a subscription. We also encourage you to use duckduckgo.com for your search needs, and also Infogalactic for your information and encyclopedic knowledge. There is also free speech social media, which The Unshackled continues to grow on. We're on gab.com/theunshackled. We're also on minds.com/the_unshackled. We're at miwi.com/p/theunshackled. We also have our growing Telegram channel on the popular encrypted messaging service at t.me/theunshackled. Remember that we still cannot continue to expand and bring you all this extra content without your financial support. So please consider supporting us on patreon.com/theunshackled or paypal.me/theunshackled. There is also our premium membership option on our website, theunshackled.net/membership, and our web donation form at theunshackled.net/donate. We are also on subscribestar.com/theunshackled, and we also have our online merchandise store featuring our most popular products at theunshackled.net/store. So thanks once again for your company, and we'll see you for the final farewell show at the end of the week.
Thanks for tuning in to The Unshackled Waves. Please visit theunshackledwaves.net for all the ways to subscribe and follow the show. Don't forget to pick up your free ebook at theunshackledbattlefield.net, and keep checking out theunshackled.net for all the latest news and commentary.